Hello and welcome to Parallel, a tech podcast with accessibility sprinkles. I'm your host, Shelley Brisbane. This is episode 91. Well, Apple's Vision Pro device has been out for a little bit more than a month now, and we've seen a lot of reviews and a lot of hot takes, and now, finally, we're even seeing some folks with accessibility needs talking about their experience with the Apple Vision Pro. I am still among those who do not own one, so I'm trying to talk to everybody I can who has one to find out what their experience with the device generally is, and as well as their accessibility experience. And to that end, I've asked somebody who got a Vision Pro fairly soon after they were announced to join us on the show today, and that is Zach Knox. He's a software developer, an Apple enthusiast, and a guy who has a Vision Pro. Zach, welcome to Parallel.
Hello. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, and I really appreciate your taking the time to talk to us. You wrote an article about your experience with the Vision Pro. You have low vision, and so you wanted to use this device, but you also had accessibility needs, and we'll get into some of those specifically. But I was really interested, I guess, why you immediately wanted to get a Vision Pro right out of the gate.
I feel like I've sort of been like VR curious for a long time. I don't know when the first, Oculus Rift and all that were announced. I was like, that's interesting. I don't really want to build a gaming PC. I don't know. I could, but I don't know. And then the first Quest came out in 2019. And I immediately got that because I'm like, great, now I don't need a PC. And I can try this thing. And I've tried it. I've used it off and on for various things, play Beat Saber and Super Hot VR and other stuff. And one thing that VR games don't generally require is like super fine, like detail focus, like reading a lot of fine text and stuff. So for me, that doesn't really cause much of an issue. Like broad scale, like Beat Saber, there's these giant blocks, you wave the controllers, no real problem. And then, so of course, as an Apple enthusiast, I see their thing. I'm like, well, that's really interesting. But I'm like, will that work for me? There's a lot of like fine tech, and they focused on it in the keynote or whatever. They're like, oh, you can read this Safari tab with this tiny, tiny text in it. And I'm like, well, I'm curious about that, but I'm not actually sure will that work well for me. But I of course still wanted to try it, because I'm like, well, I'm really intrigued by all the VR, AR, XR technology. And I'm like, oh, I want to try it. So I wanted to try it. I don't know.
Were you thinking about games particularly, or were you just thinking about it?
Not necessarily, because like I don't use my like Apple devices near as much for games as like my Nintendo Switch or whatever. So I was more thinking of it like this is a different kind of thing. My Oculus Quest and my Meta Quest 3 now, those are the game devices. This, like, I've played games on it. I've tried the Synth Riders as a port. What the Golf has, like, a VR or, like, an AR mode.
I've heard that's good, actually. I've never seen that game, but I've heard a couple people say good things about that game.
It's a really good game. I don't know if AR is the best way to play it. It's mostly just the same as the iPhone and iPad game, but some of the levels are 3D in your room. But there's some games on there, but that's definitely not the main focus. I do think the main focus is at least one of the main focuses is like content consumption, but it's more passive, like video, where I think, at least in my experience, the Quest headsets have fallen down. Just like they don't have the quality to handle that.
Well, let's talk about your accessibility situation. You use Macs and iPhones and iPads. And what kind of accessibility do you use on those devices?
I have a few different needs based on my condition. The most pressing need for digital devices is like text size and visual font size and stuff. I tend to hold my phone and my iPad closer to my face than probably most people. Sometimes if you might see me in person, you might say, oh, well, they're holding their phone like a lot closer than other people would. And like my display for like my work Mac, I have an external display. I clearly have it closer than most people would. So size is a big factor for that. And in VR headsets, a lot of the times they assume that you have like a set level of like visual acuity. So one example that I can think of off the top of my head from the Quest headset is there's this game called Power Wash Simulator. It's on a whole bunch of platforms, Xbox, PC, whatever, but they have a VR version now. And I'm like, oh, well, I like that game on Xbox. It's a strange game. You know, you power wash, you know, environments. I don't know, but I enjoyed it. So I tried it on Quest and the actual gameplay is fine, but the menus are like a fixed distance away from you. So like, oh, you want to go in the menu and see what your progress is. Well, it's like a fixed distance away from you. And the text is kind of small. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really work for me. There's some workaround. You can like pause the entire game and then you're like in like the pause environment. You can like move around and sort of see it. It's not good though. It's a bad experience. It's clearly not built with like accessibility in mind.
So there aren't any zoom features or magnification kinds of features in the Meta Quest environment?
So the system has some text size options. There's a couple. You can go from like small, medium, large, extra large, or something like that. But those are only really for system apps. So like the menu, the browser, like the file manager, the photo viewer, stuff like that. Any games are basically their own entities controlling basically 100% of the UI. There are some games where that's not really a problem because you have big chunky UI elements, especially if you're like moving around a lot, you don't want to like have to focus on smaller elements. But a lot of games, like if you're not moving around a lot, they assume that you have a better visual acuity than I have. So I have to work around.
So in the Mac and iPhone world, you can use zoom or increase mm-hmm. text size with dynamic type. So did you have a pretty good idea, given that it was Apple, that the Vision Pro was going to at least have something for you? Were you pretty confident about that when you got it?
Well, so when I watched the keynote in June, I was very curious, like, what is their accessibility story here? I knew they'd have something because every platform they've put out in the past decade has had and has increasingly had more and more accessibility features. They put out those great press releases every like late May talking about the new features. They keep iterating. They did that whole big video that one year talking about voice control. So it's clear that they cared about these kind of features, but I was like, but I don't know how you do this because I've had experience with the Quest. I'm like, well, there are limitations sometimes because of the lenses. You can't necessarily get physically close to things because the fixed focus of the physical lens and the display means that if you're like 3 inches from a digital object, it's going to be like super blurry. So just by like the physics of the focusing. So I'm like, but they could make things physically larger if they wanted to, like in your environment, and that could potentially help things. So I'm like, oh, well, they could do things, but I'm not sure how. And then later on in the week in WWDC, they had a session talking about like, oh, how do you implement accessibility features in your app? And I watched that and I was greatly encouraged. They had a lot of features. They showed off VoiceOver. I'm like, they're putting VoiceOver in a VR headset. I was intrigued by that. You know, they showed Zoom briefly. They showed a few other features and they showed I think they showed a brief like glimpse of like one of the menus or something where they showed some of the other features. So it was clear to me like they're taking this seriously. I didn't know everything that they were doing, but I knew enough that like it was clear that they were taking things seriously, which encouraged me at least.
Did you feel any pause about the price and the uncertainty put together? Like, you knew it was going to cost you $3,500 at some point, and then you knew there was going to be accessibility, but you didn't know exactly what. Were you worried when you made that purchase that you might not get value out of it?
To an extent, but also like they have a pretty good return policy. Yeah, so if it was like completely unusable for me, it would like, I would just like go and do my return. And I know you did, went to a store and did your demo. I was actually surprised when I read some of that at how open they were at willing to let you play around with accessibility features in the demo. I wouldn't have anticipated that. But I knew, like, if I wanted to, like, really understand how well this would work for me, I wanted to, like, try it for, like, more than 20 minutes in an Apple store. So I gave it a shot.
Right. And I mean, my experience, I knew I had two choices. I could either go in and just literally, to use a weird expression, go in blind and just say, hey, show me the thing, and I would see how, what I could see. Or I could tell them ahead of time, I've got some accessibility needs. And I felt like if I did that, I was going to get a better demo. And that's how it worked out for me in the end.
And I guess additionally to that, I, a lot of the time, anytime I'm outside my home, basically, wear tinted contact lenses. So they, like, tint the world because my eyes are more sensitive to light. So that helps me, especially outside with more dim environment. When I'm at home, not as big a deal. I can control the light in my environment.
I could ask you about vision correction, because in your article, you said that you don't have the kind of contacts that can be applied to the Zeiss inserts. So did you knew going in that you weren't going to be able to have an insert for your, for vision correction with the Vision Pro?
Yeah, my vision is specifically with, like, it's like a genetic thing with certain cells in my eyes, such that it would not be corrected. Like, it is not correctable to 20/20. Period. So I have to deal with, you know, these various accommodations. I do have a bit of a prescription in these contacts, but it's not strong enough that, like, I significantly notice it when it's in or when it's out. I much more notice the tint, such that I didn't find much value in paying, what is it, $150 to get?
I think it's $100, but still, yeah.
Yeah. To get corrective lenses, prescription corrective lenses.
Right. So let's talk about the setup experience. Apple famously does give you the ability to turn on accessibility features when you're setting up, and especially if you're not going to use eye tracking, which I know you did. There are alternatives even in the setup process. But did you use any accessibility features while you were setting the device up?
In the setup? I don't know if I did or not. I think early on it asks you, like, what window zoom scale you want. So the Vision Pro has window zoom, which is very similar to what on the iPhone and the iPad they call display zoom, which just scales the entire UI altogether. But of course, you're not scaling your AR physical environment. You're only scaling the windows. So they call it window zoom.
Right.
And there's four different sizes. There's small, medium, large, and extra large. And I immediately picked extra large. I'm like, none of these other sizes are going to be good for me. I know that I'm going to need to have closer, have things larger and closer to me for this to really work out. I'm pretty sure they offered that in the setup. I'm not 100% on that, but I'm pretty sure.
Besides, I don't know that, for sure. I would expect that they would, though.
Yeah. Besides that, I think I just went through the base setup and then afterwards dove into the accessibility settings and tried things out. I knew immediately that I'd be changing text size. I run, I think, 120% on my phone and my iPad. So I knew I'd be bumping it up a little bit at least. I think right now I'm running it at 135% on my Vision Pro, although the stops are different than they are on the phone. So I think that's
that,
like,
makes sense.
I think it's actually, like, if you, and you notice this a lot in the compatible apps, because the compatible iPhone, iPad apps use the stops from the phone, basically. So things feel a little odd. So I think I'm actually one stop higher on the Vision Pro than I am on my phone.
So how does eye tracking work for you? And was that something that you were worried about? Because obviously you've got to look at touch targets and then you pinch to actually activate them. But were you concerned? And what was your result when you started using eye tracking?
I was actually really concerned about this. I have some nystagmus in my eyes, which has, like, involuntary eye movements, which day to day I don't necessarily notice that much. I think sometimes it makes it harder for me to, like, read something long as quickly. It might take me longer just to, like, keep focus. But day to day, I don't necessarily notice. With Vision Pro, you notice. There are definitely times when it's like, oh, I'm trying to like get something in a corner or whatever. Or I'm actually back up to the, you notice. And I was concerned that that would cause problems with the eye tracking. Apple has a page where they list a bunch of like vision conditions where you might face problems, and nystagmus is on there, and rightfully so. There are certainly issues that I experience with that. Particularly things in corners or things that are very close together. So I think the most common example I experience is in the TV app. If you're watching a movie or something, in the top left, there's a back button, which takes you back to like the menu. And then there's the environment button where you can make the video even larger, like have it all the way over the lake, or you go to the cinema environment or what have you. And it is often very hard for me to tap that environments button with just eye tracking, because it always keeps wanting to like move over to the back button, stuff like that. So there's definitely issues, but I found that by and large, it ends up working much more successfully for me than I anticipated. Most big things just work fine for me. The home menu, the home view, getting to an app, no problem. Scrolling is not a problem, because generally when you're scrolling, it's a very large window in front of you. So you can kind of just look generally at it and swipe your fingers up. So I was surprised at how well it did work for me, but there's definitely some caveats.
But when it doesn't work, are you able to quickly jump to pointer mode or some other means? Like, okay, if you can't get that environment button by looking at it, you've got to find a way to press it if you need to.
So much like iPhone, iPad, I guess even Mac, you can do it with the Touch ID button. You can triple press the digital crown, and it brings up an accessibility menu.
Right, in front of you. Accessibility shortcut.
Yep. Or if you only have one thing, it'll just enable the thing. So I think I have increased contrast, pointer control, zoom, maybe even one other thing in there. And I can go in, I can turn that on really quick. I generally don't live in those modes. I find sometimes it makes things feel a bit slower for me when I know that for the majority of things, I can deal with the eye tracking. But for like a quick, I need to get in to this one thing quickly, and this particular button isn't working, I go and I turn it on, I do the thing, I might do a couple other things with it on, and shut it back off.
In the post you wrote, you talk about the other modes, pointer mode and voiceover and voice control, mm-hmm. other accessibility features that it sounds like you don't use particularly regularly, but you did go to the trouble of explaining how you interacted with them. And I guess I wonder why you did that, or is it just providing information, or did you actually feel like those are modes you probably would use at some point?
I wanted to try everything. They offer all these different modes. I wanted to know, what do these offer for me? Where might these be useful? Sometimes some modes might be useful for some things, some might be useful for others. So I tend to gravitate towards pointer control when there's like a bunch of controls going on. I tend to gravitate less towards zoom. I'm not entirely sure what that is, but I wanted to try all of them, see what I preferred. And while I was at it, I'm like, well, most people probably don't even know these exist. So I might as well tell people about it while I'm at it.
And you're not a voiceover user at all on the iPhone or on the Mac. Did you have any experience with it?
I have some experience with trying it when working with like some iOS development stuff in the past. It's always helpful to test with voiceover, see if you can actually utilize all the features of your app. If you turn on voiceover and you turn on screen curtain and you say, can I actually access all this stuff? I find it immensely valuable. So I had a little bit of experience, but I'm certainly no expert. And voiceover on Vision Pro feels like it's an expert feature to me.
Well, that's the reason I asked, because I feel like, I mean, I understand voiceover on the iPhone and on the Mac, but I wonder from that perspective whether somebody on Vision Pro, because these are hand gestures, finger gestures with voiceover, as opposed to the swipes and the flicks and the taps that you do on the iPhone specifically, or the keyboard shortcuts you do on the Mac. So I guess I wonder if you have a sense of how big of a learning curve that is for somebody who might even know voiceover on those other platforms.
Yeah, they offer a tutorial. They have a multi-screen tutorial guiding you through each gesture. There's a next gesture, previous gesture, a select gesture, and there's some to activate the rotor, much like on the iPhone, and so forth. So they do a little bit of work to guide you. Where it gets really confusing, at least to me, is once you have multiple windows, because then you're dealing with these gestures, but you might also be dealing with things in space. And it tries to do its job in like using spatial audio to say, oh, this is to the left of you, or this is to the right of you. And it plays a little cue when you've switched apps, but it's still not quite there, I don't think. There's times when it gets confused at what you're looking at, or you're trying to like keep controlling one app, but then it switches contexts on you and you like, where was I? Right. So I think there's a combination of, there's a lot of gestures to remember. I had to go through the tutorial at least twice because it was like a week between times. And I was like, wait, what am I doing? And I think that there could be room to, particularly in the spatial area, to say, oh, we need to like keep context on this one thing.
Right. Yeah, I would imagine that finding your place is a lot easier. And you can also, on a Mac or especially on an iPhone or an iPad, you can basically go back to where you, a place where you know where you are. You're in one app at a time, usually, and you can always go to a particular place and start from there and move outward to locate yourself in space. But I would imagine on the Vision Pro, that's a little harder to do.
Yeah, you can just like work with one app at a time. And I think at that point, it feels, voiceover feels less complicated, because then you are just on that single focus. I can't say I'm knowledgeable enough to speak to what someone who might actively be using voiceover, how they might work in the device.
That's fair. Now, I wanted to understand your experience with dark mode, and you didn't really talk about it a lot, but there's also invert colors, which are features that are available on the Mac and the iPhone. And you say that there's not really a concept of dark mode and light mode in Vision Pro. Can you explain what you mean by that?
There's sort of two types of apps on Vision Pro. There's the native apps and there's the compatible apps. The compatible apps are straight up like using iPad or iPhone UI, but they only use the UI of the light mode variant, unless there's like an override within the app, like something like Overcast has, where you can go in the settings of the app and do it. So you're forced into a light mode in all compatible apps, basically. And I hate that.
That sounds horrible. I think I would hate it too.
I basically, since as iOS 13, when dark mode was introduced, was all on dark mode. I even like, I don't know, like 5 years before that, in like the iOS 7 era, there was like a jailbreak tweak where you could turn on dark mode. And I tried that for a while when I was doing that. So I was all in on dark mode on my phone, my iPad. I've gone on and off on the Mac, but I, at this point, am mostly on dark mode. So having to, once again, like use light mode apps, it's frustrating. Now, in my experiences, I'm not in compatible apps all that much. I much prefer just using the native apps, not just for the dark mode, but for other reasons with control size and stuff I'm sure we'll get into. But when you're in them, it's definitely a little more frustrating in that regard. And I think that this is something, like dark mode works fine. I've used Overcast in dark mode. I used Ivory in dark mode, and they're fine. I think they fit better with the native apps. But in one of the design sessions at WWDC, they talked about how iOS, iPhone and iPad apps were designed to use the light mode appearance as if it was like a conscious choice on their part that they only have one mode. And I wish they would reconsider that decision because it feels, one, it feels like a potential accessibility problem if people who much prefer the dark appearance for like having the light text on a dark background makes it easier to read things. But two, I just think it works better with the native UI because the native UI, which I haven't spoken about yet, but the native UI uses a sort of dark transparent background with light text on top of it, much closer to what you would consider a dark mode on iPhone or iPad, and sort of maybe even a little closer to dark mode on Apple TV, where the background isn't black, but it is like sort of like a dimmed dark appearance.
Well, and I think most streaming boxes or other TV type UIs have adopted that sort of thing. I mean, obviously yeah. there's some that have theming, but that's kind of the default for something the size and the usability of mm-hmm. a TV app is it's usually dark with light text, whereas that's not the default in computers or phones, yeah. but you're supposed to be able with dark mode or with invert colors to switch it if you want to or need to.
Yeah. And I find the native apps much more usable in that regard, in addition to the controls and text size changes. It's just easier for me to, it's just easier for me anyway, to parse the light text on the darker background. And then even if that even is a concern, you can turn on increased contrast, which takes that translucent background and makes it a little more opaque and a little darker, which I don't always keep on. Sometimes I turn it on, sometimes I turn it off. Depends on the environment I'm in. But it can make things even more readable for me, potentially.
Can you still experience the environment behind it if you put increased contrast on?
Oh, yeah. The windows still aren't like 100% opaque. There's still a little bit of translucency. But almost all the time, like the window isn't 100% of your view anyway. So like you can still see, you know, white sands around you or what have you.
Is there an invert colors feature like on the iPhone? I don't think you wrote about that, and I was wondering if Vision Pro even has such a thing.
You can use a classic invert option, which interestingly only inverts digital content. It will not invert your AR pass through, which is a little weird because it also inverts the color of the shadow. So you got this white shadow around on your floor. It's very strange.
That is very weird. And classic invert famously is the one where images are not rendered correctly. They're in negative. So
I don't think there is any smart invert, at least that I can find.
Right.
And then adding on to the AR pass-through not inverting. Digital environments do invert. So if you're in Mount Hood or if you're in White Sands, that gets inverted, which feels very odd.
That is very odd. It seems like it would be very unpleasant. What's the point of it at that point? You're like looking at a negative of something beautiful and you're not going to get, I mean, I assume you could pick environments that knowing that if you were in invert colors would work for you. Because I have this weird paradoxical situation in which if I'm in invert colors as opposed to something like dark mode, I am using sometimes a background that is intended to be very light, but obviously mm-hmm. when I invert the colors, it's dark, but I'm also not putting a lot of highly visual, 3D things or stuff that has a lot of color or a lot that pops. I don't want anything to pop.
And I guess adding on to that, all of the digital environments that Apple provides anyway have a day mode and a night mode. I don't know if they call it light and dark or like day and night, but there's like a version of the environment where it's daytime and a version where it's nighttime, which the way they do it is actually interesting. Each environment sort of like has a different, it's not quite time of day, but it's like where the sun and moon sit in terms of like how dark the sky feels. So White Sands, it feels a little lighter to me. Mount Hood definitely feels darker and in the nighttime. Mm.
But so, that's controlled by the time in the device, or can you make that choice yourself?
You can manually set it, or you can set it to auto. Setting it to auto is very strange because if you are fully immersed in the environment, all of a sudden when sunset happens, it turns dark. Right. I was writing in the headset and sunset happened. I'm like, oh, I guess the sunset, because it's all of a sudden dark in Joshua Tree.
And I guess the other thing that we should say about native apps having a dark background and non-native apps not, is that if you switch from one to the other, that can be very jarring.
Yeah, I think that's very jarring. So if you have your like Zoom window, but you need to log into Zoom and you say, okay, I need to log in. Oh, I need to go to 1Password. 1Password is a compatible app, which means you're going to see it bright white light mode. So you're going from this sort of dim Zoom, you press login, pick 1Password, boom, you're like hit with this bright white view. So it can definitely be jarring.
What's your experience of using compatible apps in general? Do they, not in terms of accessibility or in terms of just in general, how they are for you? I think you wrote that they have smaller touch targets in a lot of cases.
So the touch targets are, they don't adjust at all. They're basically just iOS touch targets. And you can scale the windows up larger or smaller, but they're generally just closer together and harder to get to, particularly with eye tracking. I think with a trackpad, it's mostly fine because you can just track directly towards them. But if you're doing eye tracking, it can be pretty difficult to get things in like the navigation bars, the top of windows, particularly. But I try not to live in compatible apps very much. there's some where I'm in there a little more. If there's like a video app that's a compatible app, you're mostly just watching the video, so it's fine. It doesn't have the proper aspect ratio because it's just in an iPad sized window as opposed to the size of the video, but it works. But for utilities, I try to be in them not very often. I'm in 1Password a fair amount if I need to get passwords. I was in Working Copy when I was doing a lot of writing. Working Copy is a Git client, and my website is a Git repository. So I checked out my website from the Vision Pro with Working Copy. But the way Working Copy works is it just puts a file provider in the Files app. So once I checked it out, I mostly didn't have to deal with the app. I could just deal with the Files app, which is a native app.
Yeah, that makes it a lot simpler if you've got something where you can pass through to a native app, and obviously more apps will become native all along. But are there any categories of app that there just aren't native apps that you would really like to see so far?
I think there's a little bit of like everything, but there's not a lot of everything.
Right.
So
you may not have your choice of a particular kind of app, but you will have something that does the thing that you need to do.
Probably. So if you want to write, there's RuneStone, which is a plain text editor, and there's Microsoft Word, the classic. But Pages is a compatible app. Google Docs doesn't have an app. You want to use the website. So you don't have that many choices of applications, but I do think there is a little bit of everything in most categories.
What would you say about your own productivity? You talked about writing and software development. I'm not sure what else you try to do in the Vision Pro in terms of getting things done, but do you feel like you're able to be productive in that environment?
So when I purchased this device, I had no intentions of it being of me being super productive in it. I understood that like this is an interesting curiosity and a new chapter in Apple's history of products. I don't know if I would be productive in it or not. And I was happily surprised when I was able to very successfully do writing work in it. I had a very large RuneStone window. I could do writing. I had my notes off to the side, notes notably. The background of all your notes is just bright white, opaque, dark text on light background. You can't change it. Thumbs down. And I had a little music mini player, and I had WidgetSmith, and it was great. I could do a lot of writing. I don't think I could do much software development just because a lot of those tools require a lot of like small status things or a lot of going back and forth between a bunch of smaller things. I don't know, at least in my experience, where there's a lot more going on in your text editor and your IDE. So at least for me, where I need things in a VR headset anyway, to be notably larger, software development's a lot harder in that experience, in that environment. And that's my real job, not being a writer on the internet or whatever. So I have not really done very much software development in that regard.
Have you done anything with connecting a Mac to Vision Pro, passing through?
I have an Intel Mac, and it works. I can do it, but the frame rate is really, really, really bad. This might be a bug. I don't actually haven't tried it in VisionOS 1.1, so maybe they've made it better. But it was not usable in a way that like would like even work for like a minute. So I didn't try it. And my work Mac is not signed into my Apple ID. So even though has an M1 Pro, I have not given that a shot.
Is it something that you'd want to do given an opportunity?
I'd give it a shot. But I'm not super convinced that it would be super useful for me. I'm glad it's useful for other people. I think hearing others being able to have a like different kind of experience of using their Mac, especially if they're somewhere that isn't their home environment, can be really valuable. But for me, it's like the controls are just too small and I can't get close enough to the screen.
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody talk about a Mac and accessibility in the Vision Pro. So I would assume that things would be very small and that you're probably, and I don't know how much control of the Mac environment with accessibility features you would have and how that would translate to Vision Pro.
You can make the virtual display much, much larger if you wanted to. And maybe I'd be able to get some of the experience of having it large enough that I can do things. But the way I tend to use my Mac, I tend to be fairly close to the display and sort of moving around all the time. And that's not really conducive to the way you might use it on Vision Pro. Because if I wanted to do that, I would need to make the Mac physically large. And at that point, it's like, it feels like, even though like it might like be in the same field of view as like me sitting close to a monitor, it feels physically imposing to me. I don't know. It's just the way that the headset sort of displays it, such that I can't realistically move my head or body in a way where it feels the same way that it does when I'm like using a real display.
I relate to that experience, and also for me, there's an optimal display size, and if it gets larger, even if I'm just looking at a Mac, I can't do it. And I guess I wonder too, the thing that was worrisome to me about the Vision Pro and that turned out to be the case when I started my demo is, and I think you talked about it too, I didn't feel like I could get close enough because, I look at something at a Mac or at a phone from a very close distance. And I guess I'm wondering if even all the magnification and the text size increases allow you to get close enough to feel like you're actually able to do what you want to do, because you can't move that screen closer to your right. Eyes. You just have to make things bigger from the distance that you're viewing it. I likened it to looking through a window at one point.
Yeah, I think it's a lot better than I initially would have anticipated. Using the Quest headsets that I have in the past, there is definitely a point where like you can't get closer. Maybe you physically may be able to, but it gets real blurry just due to the optics. So I was like, well, I'm expecting it to do that. And it does do that if you get really close, but it's not nearly to the same degree. And some of that just might be the actual resolution of these displays is so much higher that when it starts getting blurry, it doesn't get like to the unusable degree. nearly as fast just from the resolution.
Yeah.
But in terms of being able to bring things closer, I was happily surprised. Like they definitely allow you to bring things closer. Now you're not going to want to bring things closer than like a few feet from you, because then it's just not a fun experience.
Right.
Too close, but it's like
watching TV 2 inches away. It's really hard to do,
but you can definitely have it to a point where it's at, I don't know, a reasonable distance, arm's length, what have you, away. And you can scale the window up such that it's most of the time readable. Now, some of this does rely a little bit on developers adopting text size APIs and all that. Most of the apps on Vision Pro, because they're all newly compiled, are actually really good at this. There's only a couple where I'm like, this is clearly not well tested. So like the TikTok app, if you want to open the comments are all like really small in comparison to most other UI on Vision Pro. And it's clear they did not test with text sizes. They're using their own custom text view.
Well, even on the phone, they don't. You can't increase the size of anything in TikTok on the phone. So,
yeah. So, but most apps are actually pretty good about that. And so long as they are, and you can scale Windows to a place where they're mostly pretty comfortable. And if for some reason you think, oh, this window and everything in it is too small, you can go and they have a specific mode that's they sort of have as part of window zoom, but it's also sort of its own thing where you can just temporarily scale the entirety of a window and like all things in it larger using like a pinch gesture at the corners of the window. And that's, I don't actually use it nearly as much as I thought because I tend to rely more on text size, but it can be useful when I was like, okay, like everything in this window is too small, including the controls, because it scales everything. It doesn't just scale text. So you can use that and say, okay, things are larger.
You mentioned keyboard and trackpad in your writing, and I know, to me, even not doing any productive work on the Vision Pro myself, my first thought was, well, I would never want to use it without an actual hardware keyboard. And is that the way you feel? Do you always use a keyboard and a trackpad with it?
So I wouldn't say always, because there's plenty of time when you just want to use it to consume media. If I'm using it to watch a movie in the TV app or to like look at photos or what have you, I'm not going to get my keyboard out because I'm just poking through menus and I'm not going to type very much. If I'm going to write anything longer than a sentence, I think a keyboard is necessary for me, because the virtual keyboard is all these little touch targets really close together. So the thing with the eye tracking where you look and then you tap at a letter fails very quickly for me. I can get it for a few letters, but it quickly will like jump to the letter over to the side and jump back, such that I type the wrong letter, and that happens not infrequently. And you can go and you can peck at it with your fingers if you bring the keyboard close to you, which actually is a good example of, oh, you can bring things closer to you. You can bring the keyboard close enough to you and it not be blurry such that you can type with your like two index fingers. But typing with your two index fingers is never going to be super fast. So no matter what.
I didn't
what
know you could do that though. That's interesting. I mean,
you can do that on basically any UI element.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't want to do it, but if I'm entering a username or something like that, filling out a form or whatever, it might work.
And there have been times with even non-keyboard UI elements where I'm like, I could go and turn on an accessibility feature, but it's right here and I can reach it. So I'm just going to lean over and poke at it because you can.
I want to get us to talking about media consumption, but before I do that, I want to ask you if there's anything about the interface or the accessibility features or just the way you've used it as a productivity device that we haven't touched on that you think we should.
I don't know in particular. I've been happily surprised that most apps I've used have been pretty good from like a text size standpoint, and most apps on the system are, you know, like the kinds of things you might find on an iPad, right? Which are like like could be various like productivity or utility kinds of things is the most common kind of app outside of maybe content consumption. So, and I've been happily surprised that most of those are pretty good.
Good to hear. Well, let's talk about content consumption. Obviously, Apple TV is there and you can consume through that app. And I read this week that VLC is coming to Vision Pro, which makes me happy because I always consume video from other weird sources. I don't remember what YouTube's situation is, but how much content consumption have you done? What kinds have you been doing and how's navigating around that been?
Yeah, so I've tried a little bit of everything. I've tried the watching some 2D stuff. I watched Constellation on Apple TV, which I'm jury's still out on how I feel about that show. I watched a 3D movie. I watched Gravity, which was interesting. I watched the immersive stuff. The immersive stuff is the reason to buy a Vision Pro. It's the best thing on the
It is, absolutely. I wasn't sure how I would react to it, but I was like, oh, I get it once I saw it.
It is, I think, by far the most impressive demo of this product. You can experience the AR pass-through, but the AR pass-through is like these live cameras. There's some graininess. There's some latency. There's some, not latency, but like motion blur, what have you. And it's good, but then you look at this immersive video and like, oh, that is real. So that's impressive to me. Let's see. And then besides Apple's own stuff, there's a smattering of other apps. There's Disney Plus, which actually has a lot of 3D content, Max, and then some third-party tools to watch other services like YouTube. So Juno by Christian Selig is great to watch YouTube, and Television by Sandwich, which is an interesting app where you can have a physical object in your room that plays video, which is intriguing. I don't know how I feel about it, but it's intriguing.
Yeah, I read about that one. It does sound fun. I guess I wonder, it doesn't matter, but I do sort of wonder if those things are going to have staying power or if it's just, hey, we have a Vision Pro and this is a thing that we can do that's really interesting. It may be a gimmick, but it's fun.
So I think for most media, I found that I much prefer watching media in the Apple TV app for one reason, which is the cinema environment. So different app, besides the Apple provided like Mount Hood and White Sands, different apps can sort of provide their own sort of pseudo environments just by presenting a 3D space around you. So Disney Plus has like the Disney Plus Theater and the Monsters Inc. Scare Floor. Apple provides one that's a cinema environment, which puts a large cinema screen in front of you, and basically there's nothing else around it. Mostly black. There's a little bit of texture. And then you can choose where in the theater you are, front, middle, back, and then floor or balcony level. So I generally am in the front floor level, which is similar to where I am in a theater. It's not like the nosebleed seats. It's the maybe like right at the dividing line where the where sort of the walkway is in most theaters in terms of front. And I find that to be a much more enjoyable experience. If you're sitting down and really want to experience something, like a movie or TV show. And I desperately wish Apple would provide that kind of environment to like Disney Plus or Max. It's not like a must have, but it's a significant value add to watching things in the TV app.
And do you feel like the comfort of the device allows you to watch a full movie and not be get a headache or have to readjust yourself or move around? I mean, how comfortable do you feel with this thing on your head?
I've been sort of back and forth on how I feel about the comfort of it. I started with the Solo Knit Band just because that's the one that they promote most. And then I switched to the Dual Loop Band because I'm like, the Solo Knit, the way I was initially wearing it, really got on my forehead. I tried the Dual Loop. The Dual Loop is certainly better because it has a top strap, but I found it a lot more fiddly to take on and off if you need to adjust it frequently, because it's two Velcro things, one across the top of your head and one across the back. And I also found the back of it didn't quite sit where I wanted. And maybe that's my fault for not quite sizing it exactly the way that would fit perfectly for me. But I decided maybe I should give the Solo Knit a try again, because the Solo Knit band has a dial so you can quickly get it to where you want. And I tried it again with different places, and I think on the back of my head. And I think I might stick with that. And I surprised myself with this information, because like, there's no top strap, so there's significantly less support. And I think that's true. But I was able to get through, I think, all of Gravity, which is like, 90, 100 minutes. And then I was just poking around in the system doing some other stuff afterwards. And it wasn't a problem for me. So I started kind of like negative to neutral on it. There's some stuff where it's like, you're gonna feel it just because it's a VR headset that I've experienced before, because I have used other headsets that I wasn't surprised by and just not fazed by. But I have surprised myself because I've gotten, it's gotten more comfortable with time as opposed to less. It just in getting more familiar with it. I don't know.
Are you using it more or less the same than when you first got it?
I would say less than when I first got it, because when you first get any product,
you just play all the time.
you're trying it all the time. So now I use it when I have some particular like larger time block to make use of it. So, and this is, I think, an important distinction in my mind anyway, of how this product fits to me versus like an iPad. I love my iPad. I use my iPad all the time. But the key distinction between an iPad and a Vision Pro to me is like, and I think I said this on Mastodon, like the Vision Pro, when you're using it, it feels like a grand experience. You're putting this thing on, you have these big windows around you, you're in it, you're doing a thing. The iPad is much more get in and out. You can grab it, you can do something for a little bit, you can get out of it quickly. So it's a different kind of experience. So when I'm using Vision Pro, I tend to use it for longer time blocks of things, at least most of the time. So I'm there to watch a whole episode of a TV show, or I'm there to sit down and have a writing session or what have you. And I think a lot of that also depends on, at least for me, because I'm not using it for my like day job work, depends a lot on like what current projects I'm working on. So when I was deep into writing the piece I put on my website, I was in it a lot more because I was doing a lot of writing and some edits, which I'm not doing as much right now. I'm not writing something right now. So it ebbs and flows like that.
You've talked a little bit about things that aren't perfect yet, or that, you know, the compatible apps situation and dark mode. Is there anything else that you think you'd like to, Apple really needs to fix or make better to make the Vision Pro experience live up to what you thought it was in the beginning?
I think a lot of the stuff they need to improve are just like, this is a 1.0 product with a 1.0 OS. And you can kind of tell. There's a lot of rough edges in a lot of different places. It's gotten a little better with 1.1, but it's clear there's still a lot of rough edges. If you want to do complex window management, you move your windows all around and then you do the recenter and you go somewhere else. Sometimes they can be a little out of place and you're confused why. I'm not super concerned about that stuff right now just because it's an early product. The stuff I'm more concerned about is stuff that feel like design decisions on their part, like the light mode iOS apps. But a lot of the like bugginess I think, or like lack of more sophisticated window organization. You can manage Windows yourself if you want. But it's like, there's no like expose kind of option. I imagine will work themselves out with time.
Sure. Sometimes on the show, we do a quick one more thing topic, just something a little, I don't know if whimsical is even the way to say it in this case, but I guess I'm wondering, do you have a favorite app on Vision Pro that you just love for whatever reason? Either it's fun or it gives you productivity, or what's your favorite Vision Pro app?
So I'm not going to pick any first-party apps because that's boring. I think that the most interesting app certainly is Black Box by Shapes and Stories. They've had an iPhone app for years and years now. I think they won an Apple Design Award for it. And in the premise of the iPhone app is use basically every feature of the iPhone except touching the screen to solve these various puzzles. So there's stuff for your, you know, turn on screen recording to solve this feature, or do something in every hour of the day to solve this challenge or what have you. And on Vision Pro, they're doing interesting stuff. Oh, for this challenge, you have to yell for a long time. For this challenge, you have to move your head up and down a fair amount. It's a very interesting app. I'm not sure how well that would work for someone with significantly more accessibility needs than I have. And I actually think they have an update out right around now that might have more challenges. So they only had like three or four at launch.
Actually, what's interesting is I can see them designing an app that accounts for a specific disability. Okay, so here's a not the app.
Sure.
Here's a version of the challenges that is for somebody who doesn't use eye gaze, they have visual disability, or somebody who doesn't use their hands, who's sure, all eye gaze. And, you know, that might not be a large enough market for them, but maybe it would be interesting to have one or two options like that. It would be kind of a development challenge too, I would think.
Yeah, I don't know. They had a developer feature on the developer website talking about some of their experiences in making it, which has been interesting, but I do wonder how they think about accessibility.
Yeah. Well, Zach Knox, it's really been great to talk to you about your Vision Pro experience. I appreciate your time, and I'm going to link to the post you put on your website, which is really thoughtful, and you try so many different things that some you use yourself and some you don't, but it's well worth folks reading time, even if they don't have the same visual disabilities that you do. Tell folks where they can find you online.
Yeah, so you can go to my website. It's zmknox.com for that, and that's where you can find my post. If you want to find me on Mastodon, I'm zmk@snaildit.social. And I think everything else, if you go to zmk.omg.lol, I think that has the links to all my other stuff.
Great. Thanks again for being here. Folks, if you are interested in subscribing to Parallel, please go to relay.fm/parallel. You can leave feedback for us there on the feedback forum. You can also find us on Mastodon at relayfm.social/parallel. And I am Shelley at zeppelin.flights over on Mastodon. So get in touch, send your feedback along, especially if you want to hear more Vision Pro related content, because I'm really fascinated by this device that I don't have. So I have to talk to people about it. Thanks for listening. Bye now.